Welcome to Answers Withheld, a podcast about the big questions that kids, and let's be honest, adults too, ask about God, Judaism, and our place in the world. We definitely do not have all the answers, but we hope we can help you with language and framework so you can engage meaningfully with these questions. I'm Rabbi Shai Held. For our season finale, I wanted to try something really, really special. I wanted to invite two of my very favorite people in the world into this studio to have a conversation about God and about how to have a conversation about God. My two older kids, Lev and Maya Held, I am so thrilled that you guys are here and willing to have the conversation. So welcome to Answers Withheld.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Lev, Maya, why don't you guys each take a minute to introduce yourselves? Tell us something about you.
Okay, so I am Lev. I'm 13 years old. I'm in eighth grade. I do fencing, and I really enjoy that. I play piano also. I have two pet birds.
Great. Maya?
My name is Maya. I'm 11, and I'm in sixth grade, and I like to act and do art, and I also have two pet birds.
They're the same pet birds, in fact.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you guys so much. Over the course of this season of podcasts that we've been recording, I've been talking to people, colleagues, friends, people I admire, about big questions. Who is God? Why does the Torah permit slavery? What does it mean to be in a relationship with God? And one of the things that we've been focused on is questions that kids ask their parents. And I thought it would be appropriate and even cool to sort of model in the last conversation what kind of conversations I have with my kids. I mean, we've been talking about adults having conversations with kids. So here are my kids. I'm going to hand the microphone over to you. We'll start with you, Lev. And you can sort of ask me, you know, and I'll start by talking and then I'll ask you the same kinds of questions. Okay.
Okay. So here are some questions. Do you believe in God?
Do I believe in God? The answer to that question, the really honest answer to that question is most of the time, yes. Not all of the time, but most of the time. And as I think you know, doubts are a major part of my religious life. And I've come over the years to think that actually doubts are really like integral to what it means to be a religious person. You can't really be a religious person if you don't have any doubts. Because faith, believing in something, in a way depends on not knowing it. Does that make sense? Right? You can't have faith in something that you know for a fact. So I don't know that there is a God. I have faith that there is a God most of the time. And we could talk about that if you want.
Do you feel like that's only, you know, in what it says in the Torah, or do you feel like it's still a thing today that's happening? Like, do you believe that, you know, when God talks to Moshe and all these different things in the Torah, that's like the world today?
Do I think God is involved in the world now in the same ways that God was involved in Tanakh, you know, in the Torah? I'm not sure. I think that on some level, the way God interacts with the world, if God interacts with the world at all, right, is different. God is more hidden now than God was then. God is more subtle now than God is more then. To see God requires looking much harder for us than it did for Bnei Israel when they were standing at the water in Egypt. This is something that, you know, I've been influenced by someone who you guys know, and you know how important he is to me, Rabbi Yitz Greenberg's idea that over time, God steps back to make more and more space for people. Like, we're more responsible for the world than people were all those years ago.
Why do you think God did step back and he's not doing as many obvious things?
I'm not sure, but I think God wants human beings to be more and more responsible for the world and the world that we live in. And a world in which God is constantly interfering is a world in which we can't grow up, right? In other words, if I never let you kind of go outside and hang out with your friends and figure out how to have relationships with them, you couldn't ever actually grow up. And so in an interesting way, God has to contract, you know, the traditional language of this is tzimtzum. God has to contract into God's self to make space for people.
I feel like I know that God wants us to like grow up, but like at a certain point, I feel like sometimes it might we might still need, like, just because you let Lev go hang out with his friends doesn't mean that he can't come home and, like, be with you. So, like, I feel like, it's weird because there's so much, like, stuff that happens in the world, especially, like, you know, like, stuff in, like, Israel right now and things like that. So, like, why is God not interfering in that kind of stuff?
Wow, Maya, that is a really good question. Actually, it's a really good lot of questions. Let me say two things that might be helpful. I'm not really sure if they are. One is, I love the language you just used of Lev can still come home and be with me. So I have to say that I experience learning Torah as a chance to go home and be with God. Not always, you know, not 100% of the time, but it's like a deeply relational thing for me. Like, I feel like I'm in relationship with God when I do that. Other people would say the same thing about davening, being in shul. I feel that sometimes, but I feel it more, honestly, in the Beit Midrash, in a study hall, than in the Beit Knesset in the shul. But I feel like, tell me if I'm wrong, I feel like you're actually asking another question, which is, okay, Abba, you would let Lev play with his friends, but if God forbid he or his friends were going to get hit by a car, you would run out of the house and save them from that car.
Yes.
And so God should do that. So there, I started out by saying to Lev that I believe in God most of the time and that I have a lot of doubts. A lot of my doubts come from the fact that I find it very hard to make sense of a world in which there is a God who loves us and there is as much suffering and misery as there is. Like, that is my biggest doubt. When all is said and done, that's the biggest problem. I mean, there are things I could say about it. You know, I don't think that God stepping back is done on a case-by-case basis. I think God steps back. And that means, to use language that is important to me in my own, you know, thinking about this, God is a risk taker. God creates a world and people within it. And the ways we behave can mean that the world turns out differently from how God wants. Like, do I think God wanted there to be a Holocaust? Definitely not. Do I think God wants there to be, you know, brutal terrorists who do horrible things? Definitely not. But I think God has made a kind of gamble, if you will, in order for there to be a world, and in order for there to be a world where people make meaningful decisions, where people make decisions that get to shape how the world is, that's the risk God takes.
Abba, do you think it's a good thing that God has kind of stepped back? Because, like, it does give us more independence, but also, like, it permits terrible things to happen, like the Holocaust.
You know, it's interesting, Lev, because one of the things that I think about a lot is not just whether I think it was a good choice, but as it were, whether God now thinks it was a good choice, right? In other words, given the way history has turned out, is there a part of God that thinks, I don't know if this experiment was worth it? I think about that a lot, actually. There's a midrash that says, commenting on a phrase in Devarim that refers to God as El Emunah, which means a faithful God. But when you take it very literally, The rabbis take it to mean a God who has faith. I forget exactly what the language is. God who looked, I think he looked at the world and believed in it or something like that. And I often wonder, really? I would like to look at the world and believe in it. What would it take to be able to do that? As opposed to, right, looking at the world and thinking, I don't know, this was a crazy experiment. One of the questions I also think about a lot, which is a little different than what you asked, is couldn't God have created people with free will, but less of a horrible imagination to think of terrible things they can do to each other? Right? Like, couldn't we be less creative in our evil?
Maybe God just wanted us to, like, he gave us, like, full free will so we could just kind of be whatever we are, even if that's bad.
Well, Lev, I feel like I don't think that it's like the kind of decision you make, because if we're saying that there was no such thing as humans at one point, and then God like created humans and gave them full free will, there must have been something else being thought there, because I don't think that God would just have been like, oh, let's give them like free will because we want them to be independent and like they can decide what to do. Because if you're letting human beings decide what to do, you're always going to have people who are going to decide to do horrible things.
Yeah, that makes sense, except I think God is very into free will. And he's willing to make a sacrifice of maybe bad things will happen. Like, maybe he doesn't really expect such terrible things. But he knows that not everything is going to be perfect that humans do. But it's better than humans having no free will and God just controlling everything. Because then what's the point? Humans don't get to actually...
You know, I think, Maya, that what you're saying, you know, it reminds me of an idea that Rabbi Eliezer Berkowitz, who was a rabbi and philosopher in the last century, talks about a lot, which is because God gives free will to people, including people who want to do really terrible things, that means that sometimes God effectively abandons good people. Because if I have the freedom to hurt you, then on some level, God is deciding God's not going to intervene to save you. And that's tragic. And yet I think what Lev is saying, and I think Berkowitz would have agreed with this, is that that's the cost of freedom. You know, what Berkowitz says at some point is if you ask why there is evil in the world, what you're really asking is why does the God create a world and why does God make people? That's the question that you're really asking, right?
Well, yeah.
Does that make sense?
I feel like it's just like, I think that God has the power and everything. It's really good that God is giving people free will. But I also think that if someone's being mean to someone or bullying, that's really bad. That's really sad and stuff. But you know, that's the kind of thing where someone's making a really bad decision. But then when you think of a terrorist, killing people, then at that point, I feel like it's a bit much, kind of.
It's actually difficult because what you're really pushing up against is, does explaining evil in terms of free will work for the most extreme kinds of evil, right? In other words, it's really even this God, even this? That's the question you're really asking, it feels like, right? It's okay, so you want to let Jim be mean to Joe? Oh, okay. But you want to allow Hamas to do horrific things? You want to allow, that's where the question of free will gets really, really hard. I think that's really, you're pressing on exactly the weak point of this whole way of thinking.
Yeah.
Guys, I want to turn this around for a minute. Lev, you asked me, do I believe in God? So let me ask you that question. Do you believe in God?
Well, I'm not really sure. I have some major doubts, but I still sometimes do believe in God. Because a long time ago, people used God to explain how everything worked. But now we have science, which explains how most things work. And so the world kind of makes sense to me, mostly, without God. And so I feel like there could be not a God. And the world was created with the Big Bang and not the 7 days of creation. And it could have been science that can explain a lot of natural phenomenons. And I understand God could be real. And he took Bnei Israel out of Egypt. But I don't know if everything in the Torah is real. So I'm really not sure.
I feel I really agree about the whole you know, it's really unclear. It's not sure. I agree with that. I just also, I feel I don't think that everything the Torah says God does is actually real. But I think the general idea of God is real. I don't think that the world was created in 7 days. But I think that God, you know, had intentions of creating the world and, humans and, that whole, idea of God always being there and stepping back. I agree with all of that. I just am not sure that everything that it actually says about God is completely true.
So I would just want to jump in here and say for a minute, you know, I'm not sure that Breishit literally thinks God created the world in 7 days, right? In other words, I think that is a story that is meant to teach us something about how the fact that there is a world is because of God and that God is not the world and the world is not God. Right. In other words, I'm not sure that that text ever was trying to describe the order in which, you know, the order or the time frame in which life emerged. But I'm inclined to ask you to let's leave Tanakh for 1 second and talk about your own experience of the world. Are there things that you do or that we do as a family where you feel I sense something that I might call God here? Or is God not something that you experience?
I don't really experience God that much. Like, learning Torah, if God is real, then it's like amazing. And it's still pretty interesting if God isn't real. But then, like, certain mitzvot, I don't really see the point that much if we don't think God is real. And there are some mitzvot, ben adam l'chaveiro, that are important anyway. Because, like, whether God isn't real, you're still helping other people, which is important. But I don't really experience God that much in my own life.
I feel a little bit differently from that, which is I'm not the kind of person who will then, like, feel really, like, connected to God during, like, davening and things like that. But even sometimes, like, when I'm learning Torah, like, we have Tanakh at school and things, you know, I don't always really feel that connected to God. But I feel like there are just certain times, I never really feel like I'm exactly talking to God or like that, but sometimes I feel like God's just kind of there during certain things, especially like when I get to do something, like when I was picked as like an example fifth grader at my school to give a speech, I felt like, you know, God was kind of watching the whole thing in a way. And it was like when I feel like proud of myself and stuff, sometimes I feel like God's kind of like knowing what's going on in like the back of everything.
And is that comforting? Is that challenging? How do you think about or experience that?
A lot of the time I don't get a particular feeling from it. But then sometimes it feels like really good because it's like you used to like tell me that you love me a lot, but God loves me even more. So it's like when I do something that I'm really proud of and I know you're really proud of, then it's like, how proud is God of it? So I feel really happy usually, but sometimes when I do something like that I probably shouldn't have done, I think that like God might have seen it too.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's interesting. It's cool. But a problem is like if God is kind of withdrawn, it seems, he doesn't like stop the Holocaust. So if he doesn't care enough to stop the Holocaust, I don't really see why he is going to care so much about like one person's life.
I don't think the word care is like a very fitting in this idea because I think God does care about the Holocaust and just wants to step back. So I don't think it's like God's like, oh, I don't care enough to stop the Holocaust. I think it's just I like am letting the people be the like people here.
So are you saying God cares about your life, but he's not really affecting it so much?
Kind of.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Lev, I love that formulation because I think of a God who's with us, but not actively governing us or for that matter, saving us, right? Like I think God cares about us without necessarily dictating how our lives unfold. Can I just say, I am so proud of you guys. This conversation is amazing. You're both amazing, really, truly. And I'm saying that objectively. Maya, you and I have both expressed doubts of a very particular kind, which is like the thing that makes it hardest for us to believe in God is the extent of evil in the world.
Yes.
Lev actually went in a slightly different direction, which is the thing that makes it hardest for him to believe in God is actually that he has like a different story he can tell about the world. For me, the question that most directly, in a way, leads me to God is not why does this thing happen or why does that thing happen, but why does anything happen at all? You know, Heschel talks about the fact that there are facts at all. Yeah. That's what wonder means for Heschel, right? Wonder is not primarily, oh, look at this piece of fruit. It's amazing how this came to be, or look at whatever it might be. For Heschel, it's like, well, why is there anything?
Well, I think it's reasonable to say, well, everything happens because like the laws of science, the laws of physics. But then a bigger question is, why are there the laws of physics? Like why?
Yeah. So that's exactly it, right? I think about this sometimes as that people who were our ancestors often focused on miracles, you know, what they perceived as miracles that were happening in the world. And I find myself often thinking about the miracle that there's a world at all. The fact that you and I are here and able to have a conversation, the fact that there's consciousness, which is like the ultimate miracle.
Is God real for you guys until like he's proven not real? Or is God like not real until you have a lot of reason to think he's real?
Lev, you might find this interesting to know that philosophers argue about whether there should be something called the presumption of atheism. In other words, like whether we should operate on the assumption that there is no God unless you can make a really good argument for believing that there is a God. And other philosophers basically say, well, that's ridiculous. Why should there be that presumption? But it's, so in other words, even philosophers are arguing about the very question that you just asked.
I don't really have a clear, always answer to his question for me, but I feel like God is God. God is real. Like, and unless like some Z discovery happens or like beyond like what we know today, I'm pretty sure that I would always believe in God. But in another way, like, I just think that sometimes the way that people think of God isn't what I think is God. I think that God is always there, but I don't know if I think that some of the stuff God actually does is true or if it's just getting us an idea.
I think in my experience of the world, I operate with the presumption, again, most of the time, that God is real because... And not because of an argument, because I don't think most people believe or disbelieve in God because of an argument. I think people believe and don't believe in God for all kinds of different reasons. One of them is sort of what story can I tell about the world that makes sense of the world and of my place within it? And I don't find atheistic stories about the world and my place within it very convincing. I don't think that you and I are an accidental meeting of atoms. I don't think that, right? I think that on some level, we are in the world for a purpose and that the world is here for a purpose. And that leads me to a kind of perception, I guess you would say, like a way of perceiving the world in a religious way. So that's where I start from because that's how I experience the world.
Is it that you don't think that you're a bunch of atoms together or you don't want to think?
Lev, I love you. You are just the best. That is such a good and hard question. I would like to think that I don't think it just because I like to think it, right? You know, it's like such a good question. One of the ways that I've challenged myself is that I read a lot of people who think that we are an accidental meeting of atoms. And I just don't find the stories they tell convincing. Now, is that because I don't want to? And you know, it's always hard. None of us ever fully know why we believe the things we believe, right? Do we believe something because we want to believe it? Or do we believe something because that's just how we perceive the world? And how are those two things even fully separable? I don't know. I don't really know how to answer your question. I know what I want the answer to be, but that just invites you to ask the question again. Yeah. Guys, I want to take a minute and actually turn to our listeners for a second and say that I think that moment when you said to me, Lev, you know, do you believe that because you see the world that way or do you believe that because you want to believe that? And my feeling safe enough with you, safe enough to being honest with you to say, look, sometimes we don't really know why we believe what we believe. And we can explore that and we can question ourselves, but there are ways in which sometimes we just have like these basic orientations to the world. And one of the things I actually think is really important is like, can we learn from each other rather than be threatened by each other, right? Can people who have different ways of perceiving the world talk to each other? I think that that would like bring human life and civilization forward in a very big way. I want to shift gears for a minute because I think that maybe you both have things to say that can help guide adults who want to have conversations about big things with their kids. So if it's okay with you, I want to ask you some sort of big questions about big conversations, okay? Maya, what's the best big conversation you and I have ever had?
Well, I feel like we've had a lot of big conversations. I think that sometimes big conversations come during harder times. I remember the first conversation we had about COVID and like things like that, or like when we talked about the whole like Black Lives Matter protest that we were going to go to and like things like that. I feel like when something is like a big hit on the world, it's like probably when we have one of the biggest conversations so that I really understand.
And what kind of things would you say that I say to you that are helpful? And what are the kinds of things that I might say that are actually unhelpful?
It's very helpful, like when something, especially when something's happening in the world, to tell me like the truth, which you do, and also not make it sound like the most like terrifying thing ever, which I feel like you do very well. And, like, I think just saying that, like, this is what's happening and, like, you're safe or whatever, like, something like that. But the one thing that I think that we mostly do almost all the time, which is that I feel like it's best sometimes to have separate conversations than with my brothers, because sometimes when it's something really scary in the world, Lev will ask a question that, you know, I don't really want to know the answer to, and sometimes I'll ask a question that a brother probably doesn't want to know the answer to. So I feel like just individual sometimes.
You've just put your finger on something incredibly important, Maya, which is I don't think that there is ever an answer to the question, how do you talk to kids about X? There is only, how do you talk to your particular kid about X? And your particular kid at the particular moment in their life when they're having this conversation with you. You can never forget that you're not talking about kids as a generic thing. You're talking about kids as you. Maya, I just want to, for one more second, kind of push here for a second. Let me reformulate the question. What's the best big conversation about Judaism or Torah that we've ever had?
We spent some time learning Megillat root, and, like, I just thought it was really interesting. And I remember you even, like, shared something I had said when I was, like, 7 to, like, your class about it and stuff. So it's, like, I just, sometimes when we're learning, like, when we talk about something like that, I feel like it's interesting.
So, Maya, tell me if I'm reading too much into what you said, but I think actually something that's really interesting and very, very Jewish about what you said is that sometimes the best conversations about big questions come up through studying texts. It's not that we sat down and had a conversation, what is the role of chesed and love in your life? It's that we learned a story, and through that story, we got to talk about the big things.
Yeah, and, like, in general, like, I mean, for a while we were doing, you know, learning, and I felt that's a very good way for us to talk about.
Great, thank you. Lev, what would you say is the best big conversation about Judaism or Torah that we've had?
Maybe it's something about, like, I think we had a conversation about God and arguments why God might exist and why God might not exist. That was very interesting. We also talked about various parts of the Tanakh, like, a lot. And that's been interesting, too.
What are some things about those conversations that stayed with you so that you think of them as interesting even now? I don't mean the content. I mean, like, what is it about the way we're talking?
So it's just like you're telling me things that are very interesting that, like, it leaves me with something to think about, like, after I leave. So, yeah. Like, there were some conversations where I just ask you, like, a random question and you give me the answer. Like, great, but it doesn't stay with me. But sometimes it does.
You know, what you're saying makes me think about how I think any parent struggles sometimes with, is the goal of this conversation that there are certain things I want to teach you? Or is the goal of this conversation that I want to help you learn to think better for yourself? And, you know, for you, from a very young age, it was sort of clear to me that what you wanted so badly was help thinking for yourself, right? Yeah. You never wanted, like, Abba, what do you think about this? Oh, great, I'll think that too. You never wanted that for one second. If anything, you wanted to push up against whatever I said because that was a way you learn.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But what about me?
I think that you and Lev ask questions in a very different way. Lev's first impulse is to argue about ideas. And your first impulse is to ask kind of, what are the consequences for my life of this idea, right? Does that sound right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, so it means that we have very different kinds of conversations sometimes about, in theory, the same topic, right? Because, like, Lev will say, you know, is there a God? And he wants to talk about, like, things like physics and metaphysics and the nature of the universe. And you find all of that interesting, but your instinct is to steer our conversation to, well, what would it mean for my life if there is a God or if there isn't a God? What would it? And so it's really, this is actually a great illustration of what it means to have conversations with individual kids. Because when you each say the same words to me, sometimes you're asking the same thing and sometimes you're really not. What would you say is the biggest question about Judaism or about God on your mind these days?
One, what is God? Is God real? What is God do right now? What is God like? And also about the Torah. Is the Torah, are all the events true? Like, I don't think they're all true, but like how much of it is true? What are the implications of it being true or not true?
Maya, what about you?
I feel like like at the moment, it's just, especially with what's going on in Israel right now with like Hamas, if God has all the power or a lot of power, then why are people suffering so much?
Wow, thank you. Guys, I want to ask you, it might seem like a funny question at first, which is I want to invite you to give some advice to our listeners who are grown-ups, okay? What is helpful for you when you ask a big question to an adult? What kinds of responses do you find helpful for your own thinking or growth? And what kind of responses do you find unhelpful?
The first thing is just that it feels, I mean, I don't know about like all kids, but for me, it feels really good to just have a conversation about it. And I think that when adults kind of say what they think and then they ask you, what do you think? It's very, like, it gets me thinking because I'm like, well, what do I think? And whereas if an adult were to just say, oh, this is what I think, let's move on, then I'm kind of like, good for you in a way. Because, like, it's not helping me improve on anything. And to make sure that, you know, everyone wants to feel the most comfortable they can in a conversation. So they want to be able to say, I don't agree with that, or that's not what I think.
Great. Thank you. Lev?
Yeah, I agree with Maya. But also, I think it's important for parents to, like, really answer the question the kids are asking. Don't, like, dodge the question, you know. Don't, like, answer a different question. Like, if a kid is asking the question, they probably want to know the answer. So you should, like, you can water it down a little if they're younger, but you shouldn't water it down so much, probably, because they want the real answer if they're asking the question.
Guys, thank you so, so, so much. You're amazing, and this conversation was amazing, and I think you've probably given people a lot just by being willing to have this conversation with the open-heartedness that you've been willing to have it. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
To all of you listening, thank you so much for joining us. We hope this season has been interesting, provocative, and maybe at times even inspiring. And we hope you'll join us again next season for more Answers Withheld. Answers Withheld is produced by Hadar, with special thanks to Rabbi Effi Unterman, Mara Bronfeld, Sam Greenberg, and Chana Kupitz. Thank you to David Chabinsky for recording and editing this episode. Thank you.